This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Inside Story on BFM 89.9.
Good evening, this is Inside Story with Sharmila Ganesan and Lee Chui Lin. Tonight, we take a ride on the MRT3 project.
First, we look at what the project promises and what the benefits could be, and then some of its controversies and calls for more transparency and details.
Tell us, are you excited about the MRT3 project? Call 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. This is Inside Story. It is 6:08, and most people would have heard of MRT3 by now. I presume it's meant to be this slightly more than 50-kilometer circular extension that basically links up the existing MRT, LRT, KTM commuter projects and monorails as well. It's scheduled to be opened, the first phase at least, in December 2028, fully operational by 2030. So it's a mega project that has currently been priced at 31 billion ringgit. But for all its benefits, it's been dogged by controversy and criticism. A lot of it circling very similar issues of really transparency, openness, and a lack of information in terms of how it's going to be completed.
So let's get into that, right? Because some of what you're saying, I think, especially in terms of the laying out of how it will look, gives a sense of the possible benefits. Because 24 elevated stations, 7 underground stations, so that's 31 in total. They're going to be connected to the existing lines through 10 interchange stations. I mean, all of that does speak to a certain degree of connectivity and also of coverage within the KL area that we're talking about, that I think is very much part of what we need in the public transport infrastructure that we're seeing. And that is the argument being made by Transport Minister Datuk Sri Dr. Wee Kar Siong, who described the project as the critical last piece to complete KL's urban rail network, talking about how it's going to enhance public connectivity, encourage public transport use. It's also going to introduce job opportunities to the local youth, particularly graduates of technical and vocational programs. And with this comes all the other conversations we've been having about things like congestion charges, environmental fees for vehicles that are heading into the city centre, and how that could help to reduce our reliance on cars, right? So that also comes with the proposal to build affordable homes above the multi-storey car park facilities in at least 8 of the stops to maximise land use, to kind of account for this shortage of affordable housing. All of that sounds good. So those are the purported benefits. Now, the criticisms include, like you said, the concern over the lack of public information and transparency on the viability of this project. This has been expressed by Transparency International Malaysia, whose president, Dr. Mohamed Mohan, is also worried over the total cost of the project, seeing that it has not yet actually been finalised, as well as the abnormally long project duration, because we are talking about something like 10 years.
Yeah, so Transparency International is basically calling for the government to publish all reports related to the project's approval, including needs analyses, ridership estimates and cost benefits, and said how something like a cost benefit report will actually indicate the estimates and assumptions that were used to justify the scale of this project, as well as the money, public money, that's been committed to the project. And Transparency International also suggested seeking parliamentary approval via a select committee, and essentially pointed out how with previous projects, for instance with MRT1, the projected ridership rates that were used to justify the costs then saw a huge shortfall, and then said that this leads to knock-on effects in terms of how well the system could run and the money basically coming back into the project. So basically, on the one hand, we have these questions of, or not questions really. On the one hand, we have a project that on paper outlines a lot of benefits for the citizens of KL, for connectivity, for public transport, a lot of things that we've been calling for. But on the other hand, a huge commitment of funding, public funding, with not a lot of transparency to be had.
I don't know what the balance is here exactly. And I think that that's partly why there have been increasing calls. And again, not just from transparency, actually, over the details. Because I suppose, you know, just hearing the benefits are great, but we've all also been subject to the never-ending construction, the never-ending processes that are involved in mega projects like this in the city centre. So I think in order to make the short-term, I say short-term pain, but it's actually 10 years, you know?
Yeah.
So in order to make the short-term pain, I think, feel a little more worthwhile or a little more understandable, more details would be good.
So we're going to be looking at really these two aspects, the benefits we stand to gain from the MRT3 project, but also the questions of transparency and a call for more openness. We'd like to hear from you. Are you excited about MRT3? You can call 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. After this, we'll be joined by Dr. Ahmad Farhan Mohammad Sadullah, who's Professor of Transport Engineering at USM. So keep it here on Inside Story, BFM 89.9.
Building fit Malaysians, BFM 89.9.
It's 6:15. You're listening to Inside Story with Sharmila and Lynn, and we're talking about the MRT3 project. First, we're going to look at the benefits, what it's supposed to do for us. And we'd like to hear from you. Are you excited about the project? You can call 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. Joining us now to discuss this is Dr. Ahmad Farhan Mohammad Sadullah, Professor of Transport Engineering at University Science Malaysia. Prof, good to have you with us.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good, thank you. What can you tell us about the history of the MRT3 project and how it came to be approved?
Well, it is all part of the grand plan that we had before on improving the rail network in the Klang Valley. And I guess that was the last of the puzzle, because it is a circle line. Okay, when you have a circle line, you basically connect all the existing lines, and a circle line will improve travel time tremendously, because you do not have to go along the corridors of the existing line to change to go to another place in another corridor. You can just jump on the circle line. So in any city, that is the ultimate aim of a good rail network. So I presume that when the plans were made for Klang Valley, we always aim for a circle line as a closure. I do not know what transpired. Of course, all the decision makers will have to weigh out between the pros and cons, the business models, financial model, and the supply and demand. I am not privy to the discussion, but I'm confident that the decision has been made for the benefit of the people who needs to travel, and the benefit of the city who needs to have a better public transport network. Perhaps that would be my take on your question, Lynn, Sharmila. Yeah.
So put simply then, are you a fan of this project and what it aims to achieve?
Yeah, if it completes the network, yes, I am. I am from the perspective of transportation and mobility. But we still have to work hard to make sure that the estimated demand reaches its first milestone in order for the industry to gain confidence that the people of Kuala Lumpur are comfortable with rail mobility. And because we have another milestone, the next milestone is the role of rail and public transport. Both have to complement each other to reduce the congestion level of Kuala Lumpur and to make the city of Kuala Lumpur more sustainable, so that the aims of sustainable transport will be achieved. So from my perspective, we are still work in progress, even though the infrastructure is up and about and people are using it, but there are targets that we have to meet. My only concern is who is actually monitoring all this, and who will be pushing for strategies to make sure that we meet all the different milestones in terms of targets. Because at the end of the day, whatever that we have done and we are doing must meet our sustainable transport and sustainable mobility targets.
So the Ministry of Finance has committed up to 50 billion ringgit to finance this project. What do you make of that amount, considering the scope of the project?
Well, being the last in the puzzle, it's usually the most complicated in terms of right of way. And if you can see from the map or the plan of the MRT3, it goes through built up areas and also it has to find its way through. Okay, so it is expected that it will be expensive and construction will also be challenging. I'm sure there will be a lot of tunnels and as you know, there have been a lot of challenges previously. But what is good is that the industry, the players of the industry are being given another playing field, the professional playing field. It is very important for Malaysian engineers and professionals to continue to develop their skills and expertise in rail construction, which we have actually accumulated over the years from the first rail project, in fact, from the Smart Tunnel project and also the ECRL project and so on. All this project actually improve our capacity as a nation in terms of our capability in the engineering side, in the professional side, which is a plus point, you know. So we don't only look at the outcome of mobility, but we look at the process. So having said that, I am certain that the challenges will be big. But again, Kuala Lumpur and Klang Valley has an advantage because of the land value. So maybe, I'm not sure of the detail of the costing, maybe it's the cost of the project, but whether it will all come from the government or it will be part of private-public partnership remains to be seen. I have not gone into the detail of it, but the current MRT project has survived and one of the justification was actually to use land value to allow such expensive construction and the fact that we are able to do it within, you know, a very relative short time span, which I think commendable to everybody behind the show, is something that is positive for the nation.
So you referenced, you know, this being the last piece of the puzzle. The transport minister has called it the critical last piece. And we started off also by talking about the fact that most cities have a circle line, right? So how do you see this project then changing transport connectivity in the Klang Valley?
Okay. As I said in the opening, traveling will be shorter. Especially if you go from corridor to corridor, if you see that our network is almost a corridor based, almost, even though there are already some crisscrossing here and there, but the circle line now will allow us more alternative for transfers. Okay, we never had that word used except for Central Point. I mean, KL Central was the transfer point for everybody, or Masjid Jami was the another crossover point. But now we will have more. Okay, if you look at the network, we will have at any crossing points, it's a point of transfer. So that will allow our people to be able to optimize their traveling. And with travel time being one of the most important influence in traveling in terms of time or generalized cost of travel, we would see that people will look at rail and the complementary feeder services as a good option or a better option, a new option now for them to travel. And hopefully, they will now not rely on their private vehicle. So that is what I see as positive side of the developments.
So the percentage of Malaysians using public transport has been hovering at about 20% mark for the last few years. Is this MRT3 project expected to significantly increase that?
Yeah, I think if we understand transport economics, unless Malaysians behave so weirdly different from it, it should give us that. Okay, it should give us that. And I think from my perspective, even though I've not done thorough research and analysis on the elasticity, but from my rough take when I was at SPAD, whenever the demand move was shown to us, I could see that we are behaving like normal city. And I think with improved generalized cost of travel, this term generalized cost of travel is actually a term that is quite common in transport economics, where we use all the different indicators of travel time with cost to measure the actual cost of travel. So I do feel that we will improve, provided the last mile connection is there. It is still a problem. I know, you know, in our previous talk, we always talk about this last mile connection, but we should not ignore it. It is a very important, it's also a very important part of the jigsaw. One thing that we also need to realize is that the people will have better origin destination choices so they will have more flexibility in terms of where they want to work and where they want to live. So that is also a positive point, because connectivity is much better when our MRT3 is completed.
And another thing that it aims to do is connect underserved communities in areas like Segambut Dalam, Pantai Permai with the rest of the network. How significant is the need to access public transportation among these communities?
Okay, the problem statement of all this, when we started doing it back in 2008 or 2009, is actually to improve accessibility. And that is also part of the Sustainable Development Goals. So we want inclusivity for people to have access to public transport, okay, so that they don't have to rely on having their own cars. And that will be, you know, it's good choice that in selecting the route for the Circle Line, they have also targeted these places where accessibility is still poor, especially if it is highly dense area. That should be the priority in a way. You know, we started off on the wrong footing actually for LRT back in you know, many years ago, where some of the route did not pass through the highly dense area. But now I think we have learned. So it's good, you know, so more people will use it, more access to transport for more people, it becomes more inclusive. And more importantly, you get the revenue faster, okay? But be mindful of the capacity, because, you know, I don't think we will come ever to that point, but I think we still have to maintain comfort and acceptable level of service where capacity, where we are well under the capacity, and plan ahead. You know, what the big cities have done. If you feel that we are going to burst the capacity any soon, we need to plan ahead, 10 years ahead, and have more networks and lines like other cities.
We have just about a minute left, and I wanted to ask you about these talks of building affordable homes above the multi-storey car parks for at least 8 of the stations. Is this a feasible proposal?
Well, feasible in terms of technology, perhaps yes, as long as it has been taken care of in the foundation of the station. But in terms of the concept of land density, yes, it is actually promoted, because it's part of TOD, transit oriented development. Of course, we have only tested the lavish one, the high end one near, you know, everything around KL Centres is actually TOD, and it's prospering, but it's expensive. So if we are venturing into the lower cost housing, kudos. This is sustainability. We are allowing more people to have more accommodation and near to, you know, it's the best kind of TOD. But of course, we have to take care of its, you know, cleanliness and so on, because the network will also be used by visitors around from other places. So we don't want any slums. So I think we can have that. Low cost doesn't mean that it has to be dirty. Low cost doesn't mean that it has to be slum. So I think we have to upgrade our society so that, you know, as we progress towards modernization, the people must also have first class mentality. That's my thoughts.
Prof, thanks for speaking with us today.
A pleasure as ever. Thank you. See you again in another question time. Bye.
See you. Bye. That was Professor Dr. Ahmad Farhan Mohamad Sadullah of the Transport Engineering Department at USM, weighing in about MRT3. Let us know, are you excited about this project? After this, we'll discuss the criticisms on transparency. So keep it here on Inside Story, BFM 89.9.
Beyond Frivolous Matters, BFM 89.9, The Business Station.
It's 6:39. You're listening to Inside Story with Sharmila and Lynn, and we're focusing on the MRT3 project today. Earlier, we discussed the potential benefits that the project will bring to Klang Valley, really. And now we're going to move on and look at criticisms, questions about transparency when it comes to funding and public funding particularly. So we'd like to hear from you. Are you excited about the MRT3 project? You can call 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. We have some time for messages before we move on to our next guest.
So let's see. Firstly, Naga, I think, sums up the whole theme of our show, saying the circle line is well and good for public transport. I support it, being a frequent user of transport myself. What worries me is the transparency and accountability, especially with the use of huge amounts of public money, and the government records in these respects need to be unquestionable.
So this is the thing, right? I don't think that very many people are saying that the MRT3 project as it stands is a bad idea. In fact, if anything, a lot of people sound very positive about it. I think it's that we've perhaps been burned a few too many times. There have been cases of a lack of transparency, a lack of accountability at the end, promises made that weren't delivered, that I think often creates skepticism with a lot of people.
Well, I think the other big part of this is also the open-ended nature of it, and the fact that with mega projects, once you've committed, what are you going to do? Pull out? Okay, we have done that. But in the case of the MRT3, we can't, right? Because it's something that is actually going to be interconnected to everything else. And so once we're on this path, we're on this path. And then if we're not tracking the budget or the process, or if we're not actually knowing where exactly the money is going to go, it's not like that can stop. It just means that we're going to be spending more than we anticipated. And I think that's very frightening.
Shamil says, if you've experienced JR Yamanote Line in Tokyo, you'll know how good it is to have a circular line in a city. Plus, the adventure of planning the shortest route possible is something that a train aficionado like myself is looking forward to.
I love traveling by train, actually, in Malaysia and in other countries. And I have been on the Yamanote Line, and it is very convenient. It's also kind of scary, depending on where you board.
Yes, and then the rush of bodies going in.
Yes, and also how late you're there. And when in a weekend you're boarding the Yamanote Line. But yes, 100%. I mean, the connectivity is kind of unparalleled, right? The fact that wherever you are in Tokyo, and Tokyo is a crazy sprawling city, you know that you'll be able to connect. And then before you know it, you're walking back to your hotel or your B&B.
And that's something I'd love to see in KL, honestly. Let us know, are you excited about MRT3? You can call 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. And now to discuss the calls for more transparency with this project, we're joined by Sri Munyati Yusuf, Deputy Research Director at the Institute for Democracy and Economic Affairs, or IDEAS. Uni, thanks for speaking with us today. So Transparency International Malaysia has expressed concern over the lack of public information available on the viability of MRT3. What's your assessment of the level of transparency we've seen? How much do we currently know about this project?
I think there are some information on the MRT website, the MRT Corp website, on the length of the rail, the stations, all these facilities that will be built. But I think information about cost probably through statement. I think what we know of this project now is the total cost would be about 31 billion, I think. It said, I think different from before. I think during Najib's period, the cost would be around 45 billion. And then the number of stations has also been increased. I think from before in 2017, when it was just started back then, I think the plan by then to have about 26 stations. Now the plan is to have 31 stations, but only 7 underground. We know that the tender is now being called by the government. And I think the plan is to have, they call it as a hybrid financing, where some of the costs will be borne by the government through, I think, Sukuk issuance, and the rest will be through PFI. But we are not, I think the information about PFI, how it looks like, what would be the implications of the project, it's not very clear about that. Because PFI, public-private initiative, usually in the form of concession, for example, will then provide the sort of the person who or the entity who give that financing to be involved in, for example, later on in an operating and maintaining of the assets. So something like that are not very clear right now. This form of hybrid financing, I think, still not being very clear to me.
And generally speaking, how much openness and transparency do we see here when it comes to public mega projects?
Let's refer to some standard, right? So in transparency area, so there is a really good standard, I think, developed by this organization called Construction Industry Transparency Initiative, or COST. So they provide these two types of information. Two types of information on infrastructure that either should be proactively disclosed by the government or released by request. So for the proactive one, means government have to release this information without request. There are about 38 or 40 data points that or information that the government should disclose in 5 key stages of infrastructure project cycle, from identification of the project, preparations of the project, procurement, for example, how much is the budget, how many bidders of the project, who is the winner, what is the decision, why the decision being made to select that winner, goes to implementation and the completion. So I think those are really good, I think quite good standard to assess how much transparency in infrastructure. And based on these ideas, develop what we call a transparency assessment. So we develop a scoring system to assess the transparency level of some infrastructure project. For now, we apply this sort of scoring system on projects funded by Chinese entity or have some involvement of Chinese entity in it. We call them as BRI project, right? So we carried out assessment on 4 projects. And in this assessment, it shows that procurement process are the most opaque one. So they are not very transparent when it comes to how this project are being procured. Unfortunately, we haven't used this transparency assessment on MRT. So I myself would love to see how it looks like when we implement it on MRT project.
So specifically, when we do talk about large-scale projects like the MRT3, what are some issues that could potentially arise when there is this lack of transparency?
One of it would be a government financial burden. I think, as we can see from, for example, ECRL, right? MRL, for example, we know that now the government actually has to guarantee debt or loan made by MRL, for example. So government financial burden, I think if we don't have that transparency on what kind of financing mode that this infrastructure project use, then that will be quite, I think, disastrous for the country, right? Say, for example, if there's no adequate disclosures on liabilities, on guarantees on this project, I think that would be quite dangerous. Another thing would be unexpected environmental and social impact, right? If we don't have, say, for example, environmental impact assessment are not being released, then we don't know what kind of impact this infrastructure project will have on environment. Another thing would be, I think, on viability. Some of the project may not be sort of economically sustainable. We want to know, for example, ridership, right? How long will MRT3, what kind of, will this MRT3, for example, have full ridership for certain years? So will this target be achieved if the route goes this way, for example? So that kind of, I think, TI mentions about business case or viability, feasibility report. So something like that, I think if it's not transparent, it's very difficult for experts and also citizens in general to if there are something, if there are impacts in the future, we will not be able to anticipate that well. I think that would be one of the risks, a lot of risks.
We're speaking with Sri Muniati Yusuf, Deputy Research Director at IDEAS, about calls for transparency over the MRT3 project. We'll continue our conversation after this. But in the meantime, do weigh in. Are you excited for MRT3? You can call 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio, and keep it here on Inside Story, BFM 89.9.
Break from monotony, BFM 89.9.
It's 6:51. You're listening to Inside Story with Sharmila and Lynn, and we're discussing MRT3. So we'd like to hear from you. Are you excited for this project? You can call 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, tweet us at BFM Radio. We're continuing our conversation on calls for more transparency when it comes to the government spending on the project. And for that, we're speaking with Sri Munyathi Yusuf, Deputy Research Director at IDEAS. Uni, so Transparency International's President, Dr. Mohammad Mohan, has essentially urged the government to publish all reports relating to this project. He also emphasized the need for a cost-benefit report. Could you tell us more about this particular report and its significance?
I'm not sure how this actually works in Malaysia, but in other countries, for example, the government will have this sort of feasibility report on whether this type of infrastructure are needed, what type of financing, will it use government funding, will it use public-private partnership model, for example. Reports like this usually produced by either the procuring entity and then approved by Minister of Finance. So if Dr. Mohan referred to report like this, maybe that's something that can be released either to the public or to Parliament, right? If there's either budget or a finance select committee can call for the government to disclose this information, so we would be able to know. Especially, I think in the light of our fiscal situation, it's important for parliamentarian, us our representative, to understand what would be the risk of this big infrastructure on our public finance.
There have also been conversations that the overly optimistic estimates of ridership numbers for MRT1 resulted in a shortfall in revenue. What lessons can we take away from this?
Again, I think this is come back to the feasibility report. Right. I think to what extent that I wouldn't be able to comment. I think it will also related to how the alignment, the alignment of this line, the MRT line, are being decided. It will take a lot of infrastructure project takes this feasibility like long time to actually understand this. So I think if we have that report, if more consultation with expert, with the public on this, probably the government will have a better way of aligning of ensuring that the target or like this ridership number will then be met. But I believe there are other factors that, you know, there are that influence ridership. So many things, right? Line is one thing. Maybe the support system to it, like, you know, whether bus is easy to get. So things like that needs to be thought over so that the benefit of a public transport system will reach its full potential.
So one point that's been raised is that according to MIDF's report, the MRT3 is expected to cost 31 billion, but that the total cost is yet to be finalised. Now, is this common? What are some measures of accountability that need to be in place?
If I got this right, I think right now the government is actually on the process of calling for bidders for certain package of the turnkey. I think if I'm not mistaken, there's five big major contracts are being called now, and it's possible that the contractors will have some will fall within this price. But I think given the different, you know, there's inflation, there's a fluctuations in the price of construction materials, labor and everything, we may see some variations over the years. Of course, a good planner then we will be able to see, right? Like how much is this variations if we put it against inflation, if we put it against other factors, including natural disaster, for example, how much would be the variation, the cost variations. I think that need to be understood. I think maybe information like this should be made available to parliamentarian, for example. So then it's possible that any, for example, cost variation in the future can be estimated or can be anticipated. So we will not end up like suddenly, later on, it will be like even higher than the initial cost. So So this one, I think the question like this maybe also need to be asked to engineers, like to what extent that cost variation can be minimized in the future. and to what extent that the planners can plan it better so that that cost variation will not be as huge than the initial cost.
So the report also said that the 10-year project duration is abnormal. What are some of the concerns around longer infrastructure projects and what can be done to monitor progress and budget?
I think one of the things that I can think of right now would be the cost, the construction cost, and also I think the human labor cost, right? This can fluctuate quite a lot. So I think if the project durations is longer the project durations, the more susceptible they are to these price fluctuations, right? And it will increase the cost of the project in some cases quite significantly. So I think, of course, we can't expect this kind of complicated project to be finalized within 1 or 2 years. I think, according to some studies, for example, railway usually around 6-7 years, something like that. So, but I'm not sure. So I'm not engineer, but I think the longer you build a project, the higher the cost will be.
And in closing, what would you like to see in terms of more transparency and communication when it comes to projects here in Malaysia?
Coming from a public financial perspective, my worries is always about the financial burden that this infrastructure project will have on government finance. So I think one of the things that I would like to see is to actually the government disclose a debt sustainability assessment every year. So now we know that Dana Infra, which is the one that is responsible to raise fund for MRT project, have already the loan guaranteed by the government close to 76 billion in 2021. That's around 5% of GDP. Now that if the government agrees to also put financing on MRT, that will increase this number. So I think we need to see how sustainable is this level of guarantee on government finance. That kind of assessment need to be disclosed annually. And we have that platform, right? The government have fiscal outlook documents published every year. And in previous year, they published this a very really good debt sustainability assessment to see like how sustainable our debt is. And if there's shock, for example, economic crisis, suddenly liability problem. So to what extent that this shock will increase our debt sustainability. So assessment like that, in my opinion, should be published annually and table it to Parliament as part of this fiscal outlook report. And I think the current debt sustainability, the one that they published about 2 or 3 years ago, only consists of federal government debt. I think it has not include the liabilities, the government guarantees. I think if the government can include that, and have a very comprehensive public debt sustainability assessment published to Parliament annually, that would be, I think, a really good step.
Uni, thanks for speaking with us. That was Sri Murniati Yusuf, Deputy Research Director at IDEAS. Keep those thoughts coming. You've been listening to Inside Story, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.